This is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this lunchtime. New figures show the number of social and affordable homes delivered last year increased, but still fell short of the government's overall targets. Almost 875,000 units of falsified and other illegal medicines were seized by the authorities here last year. And consumers face price hikes in broadband, TV and mobile services from next week. The news in detail with Brian Jennings.
There was an increase in the number of social and affordable homes delivered last year, but the figures fell short of the government's overall targets. The Housing for All plan had aimed to deliver 13,130 new social homes last year, but the final figures for 2023 show that 11,939 homes were provided. More than 4,000 affordable housing options were also delivered, which is more than double the previous year's figure. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehan.
These much-anticipated figures reveal a 16% increase in the number of new social homes compared to last year. More than 8,000 were new builds, 1,830 were acquisitions, and almost 2,000 homes were provided through leasing programmes. Housing Minister Dara O'Brien said the momentum around the delivery of social homes has continued to intensify. He said these homes are providing life-changing support to tens of thousands of people. However, Sinn Féin housing spokesperson Eoin Ó'Brien described the figures presented as deeply misleading. He said it was clear, though, that the government had missed its targets for new-build social homes, and this was also the case in all categories of affordable housing.
Almost 875,000 units of falsified and other illegal medicines were seized by authorities here last year, according to the Health Products Regulatory Authority. It has reported a concerning rise of over 20% in illegal anabolic steroids seized. Our health correspondent, Fergal Bowers.
The Health Products Regulatory Authority has warned of the serious health dangers posed by sourcing prescription medicines online and from unauthorised sources. Almost 875,000 units of falsified and other illegal medicines were seized by authorities here last year. The most significant categories of illegal products detained were sedatives, anabolic steroids, erectile dysfunction medicines, painkillers and stimulants. While there was a slight reduction in the overall seizures last year compared with 2022, the authority has expressed concern over an increase of over 20% in illegal anabolic steroids seized. Over 2,340 websites, e-commerce or social media pages were amended or shut down last year through enforcement actions. The authority has worked in cooperation with An Garda Síochána and the Revenues Customs Service.
Many consumers of broadband and television and telecommunication services will see their bills rise from next Monday as a round of price hikes are introduced by providers. Some of the increases relate to clauses in customer contracts that allow mid-term price rises to be imposed by providers. Also next Monday, the cost of petrol and diesel will increase as excise duty that had been cut is restored. The Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, has defended the move, which will see 4 cent added to the price of a litre of petrol and 3 cent to a litre of diesel.
It was myself, actually, who brought in the excise reductions there over a year ago. The price of fuel was at that point well in excess of €2 per litre. And even though the price of fuel is higher than we would want it to be, it is far, far lower than when we brought in these initial changes. And the truth of it is that if we were not to go ahead with the excise increase that's going up, then we would have to change plans elsewhere.
Israeli military activity has intensified around 3 hospitals in Gaza. Israel has said its siege of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, now in its 11th day, has resulted in the killing of at least 200 Hamas and Islamic Jihad fighters. It said Palestinian gunmen are continuing to shoot at troops from inside the hospital. Meanwhile, in Khan Yunis in the south, Israeli tanks and ground forces have again surrounded 2 hospitals there.
Garthy have seized electronic devices and documents following searches at a number of locations in County Louth in connection with a €4 million cocaine find off the Donegal coast last year. Two packages weighing around 60 kilograms were discovered washed up at two separate locations in North Donegal last July. The risks posed by armed conflict, terrorism and hybrid security threats are compounded by this country's low level of investment in military and defence. That's according to the findings of the National Risk Assessment for Ireland 2023, along with its associated research project Future Proof IE. The research found that the risks arising from terrorist activity and armed conflicts have become considerably more relevant after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine and the threat this posed to European security and prosperity. Four people are still being questioned this lunchtime after being arrested earlier today in connection with a suspected arson attack at a hotel earmarked for asylum seekers in County Galway late last year. The Rosslake House Hotel in Roscahill was due to accommodate 70 asylum seekers, but a fire broke out at the premises on December 16th. Two men, aged in their 40s and 50s, and two women, also in their 40s and 50s, were arrested this morning and are being detained at a Garda station in the northwestern region. Now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Building a new home? Choose Grant's A++ rated Airona heat pump and Uflex underfloor heating. Visit grant.ie.
Outbreaks of rain in Ulster and parts of Leinster today, clearing this evening. A further spell of rain in South Leinster in the afternoon, drier elsewhere with sunny spells and isolated showers. Highest temperatures 5 degrees in the north to 10 degrees in the south, in light to moderate northerly winds, occasionally fresh in the north. Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Still to come this lunchtime, Minister for Integration Roderick O'Gorman on his new plan for accommodating asylum seekers and refugees. Clamping down on illegal online drug sales, 900,000 doses of potentially unsafe medicines seized last year. A new national risk assessment, how antibiotic-resistant infections have jumped to the top of the list. A big increase in the cost of broadband, mobile and TV services coming down the track, and the 20th anniversary of the workplace smoking ban, and how it set an example followed by many other countries.
At Irish Life, we've been helping people make smart investments for over 80 years. For actual trusted advice for your money, search Irish Life or contact your financial broker or advisor. A better life with Irish Life. Irish Life Assurance PLC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Irish Life Financial Services Limited is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Irish Life Financial Services is tied to Irish Life Assurance for life and pension products.
If you're not with UNO Energy, chances are you're paying more than you need to for your electricity. As Ireland's newest energy provider, we offer Ireland's cheapest electricity rate, saving our customers up to €500 per year. So if you want to pay less for energy, simply pay a visit to unoenergy.ie and sign up for big savings with smaller bills. With UNO Energy, you just know. UNO Energy fixed discount rate EAB €1415. For T's and C's and rates, see unoenergy.ie. Suppliers pricing may change.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. 14,000 state-owned beds by 2028, 10,000 in commercially run emergency accommodation, a further 11,000 in what's described as contingency accommodation. The government's latest plan for housing asylum seekers is promising a total of 34,000 beds over the next 4 years. Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman's Comprehensive Accommodation Strategy for International Protection Applicants, to give it its full title, is the coalition's latest plan to house the increasing numbers of asylum seekers and refugees arriving from the war in Ukraine. Minister O'Gorman joins us in the studio. Very good afternoon to you and welcome to the programme, Minister. As we speak, there are close on 1,500 male international protection applicants without an offer of state accommodation. Many of them, as we know, living in tents on the side of the road. When might any of them see one of these beds?
We want to see the situation where we can't accommodate everyone seeking international protection. where we can't offer them accommodation. We want to end that situation as quickly as possible. And that's a key element of the comprehensive accommodation strategy we set out yesterday. Two parts. The first part is addressing that emergency situation right now, the fact that we can't accommodate everybody. And we've set out a number of mechanisms that we believe can deliver accommodation rapidly through the conversion of commercial office buildings, through the delivery of prefab units on state-owned land, and through the additional capital funding that the Department of Public Expenditure has provided my department.
And what does as quickly as possible mean then?
Well, within the next number of months, we want to ensure that everyone who seeks international protection here and needs accommodation can be offered accommodation. But I think it is important to say, Brian, that as well as dealing with that really important urgent situation we face right now, this document is also about a wider set of reforms
and I do want to
deliver
come to that,
state-owned
but this
accommodation.
This urgent situation is going to get more urgent. Mm-hmm. You expect that the number, this 1,500 number, will continue to rise.
I think it will grow before it decreases. I have to recognise that. We are working on each of the strands I've laid out there already. So as you know, we've recently signed an agreement with the HSE in terms of the site at Crux Ling. We're working on refurbishing that at the moment, so that will be available for accommodation. We'll be working with state agencies, with other departments in terms of securing other state sites where we can go in and place rapid build units quickly so we can actually start to move people, provide accommodation for people who need it.
But you're also warning that those without an offer of accommodation could in the coming weeks include women and children.
We have line of sight for the next 4 weeks to ensure that all women and children arriving here are offered accommodation, and we continue to look and seek additional accommodation, and the team in my department continue to do that. But we are under pressure. As you know, since December, we haven't been in a position to offer all male applicants accommodation, and that's why it's really important that we have this policy agreed across government, that we have the additional financial supports committed to, and that we've that commitment to access state-owned land for international protection applicant accommodation
in,
as well.
In terms of the longer-term aspect of this strategy, people will recall that the Greens, indeed the programme for government, pledged to abolish direct provision, and that was very much a central part of the white paper a number of years ago. What we're getting now in this plan is what are called reception and integration centres and accommodation centres. It's direct provision by another name, isn't it? Not only retaining direct provision, but actually expanding it.
No, I don't accept that. First of all, we have to recognise the situation is much different to the situation when the public white paper was published in February 2021. There we were looking at approximately 3,500 people seeking international protection each year. Now we're looking at 13, 14, 15,000 people. It's an entirely changed situation, and the policy has to change to recognise that. Secondly, the accommodation that we're providing now, it will be provided to national standards. These are a set of agreed standards that include access to people, to access to cooking facilities, and that was one of the key elements that was always identified in direct provision that was of particular difficulty, I suppose, to people in the system.
And another aspect of direct provision is that people ended up stuck in it for years on end, even after they'd secured residency. Yeah. They simply weren't able to get out. We still don't know, for example, what the turnover is from direct provision. 28,000 people being accommodated at the moment. How many of those move on?
Well, in terms of the amount of time spent in direct provision, you're right. That's been a key element over the years. And that's why the work Minister McEntee has been doing in terms of speeding up processing time is so important. She's put very significant resources into the International Protection Office over the last number of years. And of course, yesterday, she announced Ireland signing up to the Asylum and Migration Pact.
But I'm talking about
Pact,
people who clear that
which
process.
Protects, who have which sets out those clear timelines.
But I'm talking about people who go through that process, who get permission, who get residency here. How many of those move on?
So we've put extensive resources into supporting people who have got status, who are living in our accommodation, to move out into the community.
And how many do?
So in 2022, 700 moved out. Last year, after we put the additional resources, we raised that to 2,000. And this year, in the first 3 months of the year, already 830 have exited the system. Mm-hmm. So we've recognised there's a challenge there. We've put in the extra resources, and we're seeing the outcomes of that now.
You described the white paper 3 years ago as a radical shift in government policy. You say now the circumstances have changed very much. But another aspect of that white paper was the proposal for community-style accommodation. In other words, somewhere for people to go. There's no mention of that now in this strategy you published this week.
Well, what we published yesterday is radical because its scale is far more, is far greater than the white paper, and its commitment to state-owned accommodation is far greater. It was 3,500 beds in the white paper. It's now 14,000 beds, recognising the different situation. But that situation is different, and what we had hoped to create under the white paper in terms of a phase one and then a move into phase two community accommodation, that can't be achieved when we look at the scale of people arriving right now. What we need to achieve is people accommodated in accordance with national standards in a way that gives them dignity, but also to ensure that their application is processed quickly so they won't need to be in accommodation for long periods of time as was previously the case.
In terms of who and is providing this or will provide this accommodation, how it's been provided, the Green Party's website, it's still up there. Maybe they haven't brought it up to date yet, but they say that Ireland's new international Protection Support Service will be run on a not-for-profit basis, and yet in this strategy there's acknowledgement that into the medium, in the short and medium term, it'll still be necessary to turn to commercial providers, perhaps for years to come.
Right now, 96% of international protection accommodation is provided commercially, and that's a huge problem with the current system, as it denies us choice in terms of where we locate international protection accommodation. It denies us flexibility in terms of increasing or decreasing the amount of beds that we have in the system, and it's extremely expensive for the taxpayer as well. That's why that commitment to having 14,000 beds controlled by the state in state-owned properties will give us a core of accommodation. And if migration numbers decrease in future years, we can retreat back to that core. We'll be able to dispense with those commercial contracts. But if we see future surges like we're seeing right now, we have to have that additional capacity. And right now, that does require us using commercial providers.
You mentioned funding for the strategy. There's funding in place for this year, you say. For next year, there'll be a promised 140 million, I think. And for the year after 2025, 180 million. Of course, that's going to be for the next government to decide, isn't it, 2025? And in fact, this really is a strategy that you're not going to be around to implement. This will be for the next government either to carry through or look again at.
Well, we have a year of this government left, and the short-term measures to get us out of the situation where people aren't offered accommodation right now, that'll be for me and my department right now to implement. And we can also start to take the steps to create this system whereby we have 14,000 beds, state-owned beds, more control over where we locate the accommodation, and better value for the taxpayer as well. But we have to start that process now.
All right. And just a final question on the location. You promise commit to a wider distribution of IP applicants across the country, a greater spread. How can you deliver? How can that be delivered on when the imperative is first and foremost to find, to build or to renovate accommodation?
Well, we set out a range of mechanisms whereby we'll deliver additional accommodation. Some of it is building on state lands. Some of it is going to the private sector and looking to purchase, whether it's turnkey accommodation, whether it's maybe institutional buildings in need of refurbishment. And by having those range of mechanisms, identifying different sites around the country, we have better choice in terms of what are the sites we go with, what are the sites that for various reasons maybe aren't suitable right now. So by throwing that net wider, we have a better choice, and that will allow us to be more strategic in terms of where we locate accommodation going forward.
Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, thanks for talking to us on the programme.
Thanks, Brian.
The government has fallen short in delivering its target of social and affordable homes. There was an increase in the number of homes delivered last year, but the figures fell short of the overall target. Our political correspondent Micheál Lehane has the latest on this. He's in our Oireachtas studio. So what are these figures telling us, Micheál?
Progress being made. The number of social homes delivered last year was up by 16%, but it does fall short of that overall target of trying to deliver 13,130 new social homes. It came in the end at 11,939. So I think where people will focus a lot on this is in two areas. One is the number of new builds. There was a target there to build 9,100. In the end, it was just over 8,100 that were delivered. So the shortfall there is about 1,000.
There has been acquisitions as well as part of this overall figure. That stands at 1,830 now. The Sinn Féin housing spokesperson, Eoin O'Brien, questioning if those number of acquisitions are entirely accurate in that have they been fully completed at this point. The housing minister saying it does represent progress. It shows that the momentum around the delivery of social homes continues to gather pace. Last year there were 10,254 delivered, so it is up considerably on that, but of course still falling short of that overall target. But he said what was delivered last year has made a difference to tens of thousands of people.
And it does show that consistently, or at least over the last number of years, reaching these social and affordable housing targets has been the big challenge. The overall figures have been met, but not when it comes to this particular segment.
Yes, and that is the key part of it really for government, having to deliver to these people who are struggling to get housing and people too who are struggling to get affordable housing. And there was progress made around affordable housing, which of course comes in two parts, affordable purchase and also cost rental. Overall, the number of properties delivered there was just over 4,000, which was doubling of last year. But if you look through the particular categories, again the opposition say that government isn't quite delivering when you break it down category by category. I suppose the other thing about all of this is that when it comes to targets, there is a realisation within government that they will have to be expanded given the growing population, and that work is expected to take place sometime later on in the year. So the targets that are not being met at the moment will become even more lofty in the period ahead.
Micheál Lehane at Leinster House, thanks for that. From Monday, many consumers will see the cost of their broadband, mobile and television services increase. Air, Vodafone, Sky Ireland and Three will be increasing monthly prices on their plans, ranging from 2 to 8 euro, depending on the plan. The increase is coming later in the year from Virgin Media as well. In the case of Air, Vodafone and Three, the increases will be brought about as a result of a clause in customer agreements that provides for annual increases in fees. Price comparison website bonkers.ie is today calling on the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission and the communications regulator Comreg to clarify their positions regarding the use of automatic price adjustments. We've been talking to Dara Cassidy of bonkers.ie.
So they're going to be hit with some pretty big price hikes, unfortunately. And of course, it's coming on the back of increased prices for food, for rent, for health insurance. It seems as if everything's always going up. But for broadband and TV customers, they're going to be hit with inflation-busting price hikes in some cases from April. Air and Vodafone are going to be increasing their prices by 7.6%. And Three customers will be faced with a 4.5% price increase. And also Virgin Media customers and Sky customers, they're not going to be spared either. They're also going to see the price of most of their plans go up. But particularly with Air and Vodafone and Three, they're introducing what's called these annual price adjustments, where every year, every April, their plans go up. With Air and Vodafone, it goes up by the rate of inflation as of January each year, plus an additional 3%, which is why we get the 7.6%. And with Three, they go up by a flat 4.5% each April. So they're pretty big price hikes. And for a lot of people, Brian, you know, their broadband and TV might cost maybe 100 euro or so. So it's an extra 7 or 8 euro in some cases.
And you're saying in bonkers.ie that this, in your view, amounts or could amount to price signalling.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the definition of price signalling, even on the CCPC's own website.
The Consumer Protection Authority.
Yes. This is a textbook example of us. And like, listen, I'm quite pragmatic, Brian. I know that providers, whether it's gas, electricity, broadband, whatever, need to increase the prices from time to time, particularly with the telecommunications providers. There's a lot of investment that's needed in the broadband network, and they need to recoup some of that. But what they're doing and how they're doing it, I have a big issue with, because they are clearly signalling, and they have signalled in advance, that every April, their prices will go up by the rate of inflation plus 3%. And that is signalling to your competition what your price increases are going to be. And that is supposed to be illegal in Ireland under competition law. And I really think the CCPC and also Comreg need to come out and state their position on this very, very clearly. And I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, the reason why price signalling is poor and bad for competition is because everyone can then copy themselves.
Are there differences between how existing customers of these companies are treated and people who will be new customers, people, for example, who might consider consider now switching?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, everybody is going to be hit. If you're a customer of Air, if you're a customer of Three or Vodafone, you will be hit with these automatic price adjustments. When it hits, though, might be a bit different depending on whether or not you've switched. So if you just sign up to one of these providers, let's say maybe in February or March, you may not be hit with the price hike until the next April, in around maybe, you know, just over a year's time.
I suppose it does give consumers this signaling, as you call it. It does give consumers some certainty. We're all trying to manage our resources. At least you know where you stand.
Yeah, I mean, that's one argument, and I'm sure if the providers were here, they'd be happy to go with that argument. But whether it's good for budgeting, I think it's poor in the longer term for consumers and for competition.
Well, now, in a couple of statements to us, Air and Vodafone have been defending these increases. They say they're faced with growing cost pressures. They've got to absorb and manage these where possible, and indeed invest, the point you made a moment ago, in the network. So you don't have a problem with these inflation plus increases. It's the way they're being delivered to consumers.
But it's the fact that they're agreeing it, that they're letting everybody know that they're going to do it. And I get that they have to invest in their network. And actually, ironically, Air and Vodafone have some absolutely brilliant deals for new customers right now. So they are doing some good stuff. But it's more the principle of this as much as anything else. Because what's then to stop Tesco saying, oh, by the way, we're going to increase the price of milk every April by the rate of inflation plus 3%. And then Dunnes follows and Lidl follows. And then suddenly every single good or service is going up by the rate of inflation plus 3%. And also, we're not going to bring inflation down if every provider is increasing their prices by the rate of inflation and then another 3%.
And that's Dara Cassidy of bonkers.ie speaking to us earlier. There are fresh warnings today about the serious risks to health for people who buy prescription medicines online. It comes as authorities seized almost 875,000 doses of counterfeit and other illegal medicines last year. The Health Products Regulatory Authority also reported a more than 20% rise in illegal antibiotic steroids seized, anabolic steroids seized. Grainne Powers, Director of Compliance with the authority, and she's with the studio. Very good afternoon to you, and welcome to the programme. This is a big number, close on 900,000. It was, I think, slightly higher the year before, but there's a lot of illegal and perhaps hazardous medicines being delivered around the country.
Indeed, Brian. I mean, and today really is about raising awareness and making sure that the public understand that prescription medicines sourced online present a risk to their health. They're outside, completely outside of the regulated supply chain that we all get access to through our local pharmacy with medicines on prescription. And so, you know, when medicines are supplied to people in this way, we simply don't know what's in them. Nobody can stand over them.
And when they're seized, do you do any kind of test to try to establish what actually is in them? I suppose because at best they might be really of no effect, but they could be rather more serious than that.
Absolutely. We don't test all 900,000 units. We test some, but fundamentally they are medicines that have either fallen outside of the legitimate supply chain or are just have been manufactured in a fraudulent manner by criminal elements and people who are not interested in your health and are interested in financial reward. So we just simply cannot stand over any of the medicines that are supplied to Irish the Irish public that they source online.
And they tend to be seized by customs officials, are they, as they're coming in through the mail system?
Yes, well, we work very closely with Revenue Customs. We also work with the guards. So a lot of the product we're talking about today has been seized through that source. But we also have our own investigative unit who prosecute cases, and sometimes some of that material will be found either by the guards or by us under warrant.
Right. And there have been cases where there have been quite large seizures court cases as a result of that and convictions and
indeed,
so on.
Indeed. We've had a recent prosecution concluded and a custodial sentence of 2 years handed down by Justice Nolan relating to a case of anabolic steroids. You know, and in handing down that sentence, the judge outlined, you know, the serious nature of the medicines, the fact that they were being supplied not by pharmacists, not by doctors, mm-hmm. but by unqualified personnel, and the sheer scale of it and the serious nature of the medicine. So, some of the detentions are quite large.
You've also, you said, noticed a significant increase in the number of medicines which are being promoted as somehow or other enhancing body image. Mm. And you detect a trend there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's a significant increase in anabolic anabolic steroids, and we know that anabolic steroids through the illegitimate supply chain are generally obtained for body enhancement. So that's a significant part. But in addition, there's a trend of, there's a small number of products that we have seized, but an increased number this year, Botox or botulinum toxin, the name officially of it, liraglutide, semaglutide, so otherwise known as Ozempic, better known to listeners probably. And while these are really small in number, what concerns us about this is the increase in this, but also coupled with the fact that we monitor a lot of internet activity as part of our enforcement work. And we have taken down 2,300 websites, social media pages, etc., through last year, most or a lot of which have been, you know, promoting body image, promoting, you know, the fact that, you know, a product will change your life, etc. And really what we're saying to people is, if it looks too good, you know, it probably is too good to be true.
You mentioned Ozempic, which is interesting because originally it was devised as a diabetic treatment, isn't that right? But it's also been used by some in weight loss as well. And it's a drug that there's a shortage of. So maybe it's not, in that case, it's not a cost issue. People aren't trying to save money. They're simply trying to get their hands on the medication.
Yeah, well, the active ingredient of Ozempic and Wegovy is another product people may know, is semaglutide. And yes, there is a serious demand for that product for a number of indications. In the case of Ozempic, it's type 2 diabetes. In the case of Wegovy, it's in the management for weight management. Mm-hmm. But whatever you're prescribed it for, you know, and that's a matter for your doc, between a doctor and a patient. The only way to get that product is in your local pharmacy. And, you know, we understand it's in short supply and there isn't, you know, supply isn't meeting demand, and that causes stress to the public and the people who've been prescribed it. And we understand that. And, you know, it's difficult for people. Mm-hmm. But one thing for sure, you're not helping yourself by going to seek it out online. You know, you just simply don't know what it is.
Gráinne Power, Director of Compliance with the Health Products Regulatory Authority. Thanks very much indeed for coming in to talk to us. Back with more after this short break.
How many Hollywood actors can fit into one tiny box? Thousands, if that tiny box is Virgin Media's new streaming TV. There's other stuff in there too. Live sports, that show you like, your favorite apps, tons of entertainment, and even voice activation crammed in there too. So play it your way with streaming TV from Virgin Media. It's playtime.
T&Cs apply. See virginmedia.ie. Subject to availability. Third-party costs may apply. Must be a Virgin Media broadband customer. Actors not actually inside box. Ireland's best broadband. See virginmedia.ie/proof.
At Mitsubishi Electric, we strive for our planet to be in harmony. By bringing together our diverse range of technologically advanced products across heating, cooling, ventilation and automation, combined with an unrivaled technical support and service team, we provide solutions that can make a world of difference to society and build a smarter, more sustainable future. Mitsubishi Electric Ireland, harmonizing solutions for a smart and sustainable society.
RTE Radio 1.
Kings of Leon are back. Live in Dublin. Can We Please Have Fun World Tour. Marley Park, Saturday, July 6th. Subject to license. With special guest, The War on Drugs. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Kings of Leon. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. The potential for an antibiotic-resistant infection in Ireland has jumped to the top of the state's national risk assessment. Other key risks which could trigger a major emergency include disruption to our energy security, damage to underwater cables, and sudden massive inward migration to Ireland because of war and conflict. We've been speaking to the lead researcher, Professor Caroline McMullen from Dublin City University, who explained the purpose of the national risk assessment.
The objective is to look at the relative risk. So what are the key risks that could trigger a major emergency in Ireland? And what we do is we look at the likelihood and the impact of the various risks that could trigger a national level emergency. So in the 2023 National Risk Assessment, we have seven new risks on the national risk matrix. And in fact, the risk that is top rated in terms of its likelihood and impact by the experts and the expert focus groups is actually antimicrobial resistant infections. And that's not just a new, the top risk, but it's also the new risk on the 2023 national risk matrix. We also then have an increased emphasis on the fact that we are an island and an open island economy, and so disruption to critical supply chain is a new risk, and I think that just is more in everybody's mind because of the war in Europe and the fragility sometimes of certain critical supply chains, including energy, oil, and then various other goods and services that we use. Also, damage to undersea infrastructure is for the first time one of the top risks that we face, as is the disruptive use of drones, and just making it into the top 10 is the mass inward population displacement because of the war in Europe.
So these are our risks that are both judged to be increasingly likely or more likely than they might have been even a small number of years ago, and if they did occur they would have a big impact on us. We really would feel the effects.
Yeah, these are at a point in time. So we gathered all of this data last summer within a 4-week period. So at that stage, it's how likely were they and the impact they would have. And when we're assessing impact, we look at the impact it would have on people, so health, injuries, etc., on the environment, on the economy, on essential services that we all rely upon, and more broadly on the operating of society. So we take all of those things into consideration, and we talk to the very top people in the country, the experts who are looking after all of these elements of public life and policy on an ongoing basis.
If we take the example that you mentioned there of the mass inward population displacement, I mean, we've seen obviously an increase in the numbers of people coming here because of the war in Ukraine and because of conflict, climate change elsewhere in the world. But what if that was to be significantly increased, what is the impact of that, or what might be the impact of that?
So the key impact of the inward migration, if you get a very large influx of people into the country, is that you just have to make sure that we have the economic systems can support the people who need our assistance. And I think that's really important and a goal that all of the government departments would share. So what happens then is you have a whole of government response coming together to make sure that we can ensure that we have the supports in place as far as possible, and that people are absorbed into our community and into our country with as much comfort and compassion as can be managed.
You also mentioned the risk to our gas pipeline, for example, other underwater infrastructure. And again, there are implications of that from that in relation to how we seek to protect that infrastructure.
That's correct. So we don't store very much gas at all in Ireland. So we're very reliant on two interconnectors that bring gas from Scotland onto the island of Ireland. So they're a critical piece of national infrastructure, and one that we protect and preserve very carefully. Now, they are very well designed and they are well situated, robustly constructed, etc. So it's really just a monitoring role then to make sure that there wouldn't be any unintended or even malicious intent to disrupt that supply of gas, because most of our energy is also produced from gas, so it would have a massive impact on the country if we didn't have those two interconnectors functioning.
And elevating the risk from an infection, is that really learning the lessons of COVID? We perhaps never thought something like that would happen in our lifetimes, and we now know that it can and can develop very quickly.
Well, there's two separate risks on our national risk assessment matrix this time, Brian, and both of them are related to health. One is the risk of another pandemic of the magnitude of COVID, but also there's a separate risk, and the top ranked risk this time is a global issue, and that is to do with the fact that we have a lot of antimicrobial resistant infections or bacteria. So our traditional methods of managing those infections with antibiotic treatments, etc., are less efficient because of maybe overuse or misuse of antibiotics. So that's a global issue, a global health issue that we are not immune from, and also must try to manage the best we can.
And that's Professor Caroline McMullen from Dublin City University. 20 years ago tomorrow, smoking was banned in the Irish workplace, making Ireland a world leader in smoking prevention. Today, the HSE says there are 800,000 fewer smokers in Ireland than in 2004. Medical experts, however, have warned of the growth of vaping among young people, threatening to reverse positive trends. Let's talk to Martina Blake now, who's the HSE's lead for the Tobacco Free Ireland programme. Martina Blake, you're very welcome to the programme and thanks for joining us. 20 years ago tomorrow, it just doesn't feel like that, I can tell you. But the impact of this, I mean, in Ireland, we can talk about that in a moment, but because Ireland was one of the first places to introduce this ban, what was the impact elsewhere in the world?
Hi, Brian. Thanks very much. Yeah, absolutely. We were world leaders and considered world leaders in tobacco control at the time. It was the first time that a country took this kind of leap of faith, I suppose, in terms of protecting staff and employees and introducing this measure. And it has had a significant impact in terms of reducing the number of smokers and protecting the health of employees in workplaces. And since that time, 74 other countries have followed suit and banned smoking in indoor public spaces. So that has really helped. And it has progressed, I suppose, the tobacco control agenda, the whole debate around secondhand smoke and the harm that smoking caused. I suppose it highlighted that. And there's been a number of other legislative measures that have come in the intervening years in terms of reducing plain packaging has come in, so we now have pictorial warnings and we have plain packs, and we've prevented, I suppose, the advertising of tobacco as well in terms of other pieces of legislation that have come in the interim over the last 20 years in Ireland.
So you're saying 800,000 fewer people smoke today than 20 years ago, but the fact that we have a tobacco-free Ireland programme is an indication in itself of the fact that there's a lot more to be achieved, a lot more to be done. Are we going to be fighting these battles? Absolutely. Are you going to be involved in these kind of programmes for as long as tobacco is legal and is available and is on sale?
Yes, we absolutely need to kind of move, I suppose, in the direction of a tobacco-free Ireland. And the government set a strategy back in 2013 to have a smoking prevalence of 5% or less, which is, you know, as considered a tobacco-free Ireland. And we're a long way off achieving that. Unfortunately, we're at 18%, and we've stalled in that smoking prevalence over the last 5 years. It's kind of remained at around 18%. So we definitely have lots more to do in order to get to a tobacco-free Ireland. And we would encourage ministers in our government to think about new and progressive tobacco control policies to try and move that agenda forward.
Martina Blake from the HSE, thanks very much for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's very good afternoon to John Kenny. John.
Thank you very much, Brian. Sport Ireland has published a guidance document looking to aid individual sport organisations as they navigate a process to develop guidance for the sports sector in the area of transgender and non-binary inclusion in sport. In total, more than 4,000 people involved in every element of Irish sport, from grassroots to high performance, transgender and non-binary people and their families, advocacy and representative groups and the general public were consulted. The results show very differing opinions about how best to include everyone. Unsurprisingly, many from the LGBTQIA plus community and their families are supportive of inclusion through self-identification. But Sport Ireland says this isn't a view shared by the vast majority of people working and taking part in sport, who favoured protection of a female category assigned at birth. Those from the sporting community were of the opinion that fairness and safety in sport should not be compromised through inclusion. The Irish women's football head coach Eileen Gleeson selected the 26-player squad for their opening two Euro 2025 qualifiers away to France and home to England. The squad includes newcomer Anna Patton, who plays with Aston Villa in the English Women's Super League, subject to international clearance, while Denise O'Sullivan returns from injury. Ireland's journey to qualify for the Euro start with a game with the Nations League runners-up France in Metz on Friday, April the 5th, before hosting European champions England on Tuesday the 9th of April at the Aviva Stadium. Those games will be covered by both RTÉ television and radio. Leinster have recalled several of their Ireland Six Nations winners for Friday's top of the table clash with the Bulls in the United Rugby Championship. Leo Collins made 11 changes to the team following last week's victory over Zebra with Joe McCarthy.